And the Islamic Revolution served as a bulwark against them and forced them out of the country. Some of them actually escaped, some of them were forced out, some of them were executed. The revolution was a bulwark against the presence of the US and the West in general, against their presence in the region. And a new identity was created. The country set aside, actually gave up its identity of dependence on the US, and this dependence turned into independence and strength. And we began to stand on our feet, and from then on, we were not blackmailed by the West. And this bulwark was created. So, and this move was not limited to Iran. Even at that time, I said that in a Friday prayers sermon, you see, they were saying that Iran wanted to export, in their terms, export the revolution. I said once in a Friday prayers sermon, I said that the way of exporting our country, exporting our revolution is not the way that happens in other countries. I said that this revolution actually is promoted automatically. It is like a garden of flowers. When there's a garden of flowers, others automatically can smell those flowers. And this is what happened about our revolution. In other countries, actually, our revolution awakened nations in other countries. We didn't intend to actually change a government in a country or trigger a coup d'etat in a certain country and all that. We did not intend to do such a thing. But naturally, our revolution won the hearts of people in neighboring countries, won the hearts of people in countries in our region. This is one of the features of Iran. Even during the actually national movement during the Mossadegh era, the oil issue and all that, when that happened, the Mossadegh was toppled. But at that time, they said that the uprising in Egypt by Nasser and the uprising in Iraq by coup leaders in Iraq, they said that they were triggered by the revolution in Iran. But you see, they were poles apart. So they needed to find a solution. What did they have to do? The West actually had established its domination over Iran before the revolution. But now, after the revolution, they were losing everything. So they were trying to destroy this revolution. There was no other way for them. So they saw that they couldn't do it, of course. What I'm saying is refers to 40 years ago. It's at that time, the revolution was just a sapling. It had just emerged. But they were afraid of that very same revolution, which was still in its early days and years. So they saw that Iranian people were present, and they saw that they couldn't do it. Then Iraq imposed its war on us. It took 8 years, and the whole world cooperated and helped Saddam Hussein. Still, Saddam Hussein was defeated. Then they came to understand that they cannot confront Iran. It was difficult to confront Iran. They saw how strategic the revolution was, and they saw that the revolution had made its presence felt in the regional countries. So the West began to, well, they thought that they saw that they couldn't launch a military attack against Iran in order to paralyze Iran. So they saw that they needed to gain a foothold in countries around Iran, and actually countries which were related to Iran somehow. They tried to paralyze those countries in the first place. This map was, this scheme was revealed by the U.S. itself. It is not an analysis. This was a scheme by the United States, and the U.S. itself revealed that. And during the first years, around 2006 and the years afterwards, prominent U.S. officials, prominent U.S. politicians, they actually revealed this conspiracy. They said that there were six countries that before Iran, those six countries, governments in those six countries needed to be toppled, and the U.S. needed to secure its domination over those six countries. When those, afterwards, Iran would be weakened, and then they could attack Iran. That's what they said. And one of them was Iraq. Because Saddam Hussein, after the war, when he wanted to attack Kuwait, actually it released our POWs, and he wrote a letter to us, to the then Iranian president, and Saddam Hussein wrote letters and sent emissaries. Well, Saddam Hussein was dangerous for them because they had supported Saddam Hussein until that day. But at that time, it became a persona non grata for the U.S. Then the U.S., excuse me, then Syria. Because in Syria, Syria had been alongside Iran since the beginning of the war, Bashar Assad. And the Syria blocked the oil, or blocked oil supplies to Iraq at that time in order to help Iran. I remember at that time, at the time when I was president, my first visit, state visit, was to Syria. So the U.S. decided to topple the Syrian government as well. The third country was Lebanon. Why? Because Lebanon, because very strong bases existed there. The Amal movement, Hezbollah, they were all supporters of Iran. So the West decided to topple the government there. Fourth, Libya in North Africa, because they knew that on some occasions Libya had supported Iran militarily. And even in words, Libya supported Iran. And Sudan, and for certain reasons, Sudanese officials, they kept visiting Iran at different, in different eras. And after the revolution there, they had connections with us, relations with us, and also Somalia for another reason. These six countries, the U.S. wanted to topple governments in these six countries. In fact, the in their views, Iran's strategic depth was in these six countries. So the U.S. wanted to secure its domination over these six countries before actually attacking Iran. And what did Iran do? The Islamic Republic of Iran, it did not actually get involved in North Africa, neither in Libya, nor in Sudan, nor in Somalia, for clear reasons, for obvious reasons at that time. There were some reasons. I'm not going to get into them. We didn't want to get involved in those regions, and we did not get involved in those countries. But in the three remaining countries, Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, Iran's policy in those three countries, actually, it worked. Iran's policy worked in those three countries. We didn't have military presence in those countries that much, but some work was done. Great work, important work was done. What was the result of that work? The defeat of the U.S. in these three countries. They wanted to actually secure their domination over Iraq, but they couldn't. They wanted to topple the government in Syria, but they failed to. They wanted to destroy Hezbollah and Amal movements in Lebanon, but they failed to. So this was a plot hatched by the U.S. And actually, the U.S. had spent billions of dollars on this project, thousands of hours of work by think tanks, by hundreds or probably thousands of political thinkers. They had worked on this, and they were going to, they had hatched that plot in order to deal a blow to Iran. But this conspiracy was thwarted with the great power of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and Iran was represented by Haj Qasem Soleimani, by Martyr Soleimani. Now, that's why the name of Lieutenant General Soleimani is so, Iranians like him so much, but the enemies of Iran hate him so much. They even get angry at mentioning his name. The flag of Iran's policy in the fight against the enemy, actually we foiled the enemy's plot. It was spearheaded by Lieutenant General Martyr Qasem Soleimani. So now with the statements that I made, you dear Basijis, you young Basijis, you can see, so you can imagine the arena where Iran was pit against the enemy. Where is this arena? The issue is not one of a bunch of anti-revolutionaries inside the country. It is here when you understand why the enemy is insisting on having the second JCPOA, the third JCPOA. What does the second JCPOA mean? It means Iran should give up its regional presence altogether. What does JCPOA 3 mean? It means Iran should be committed not to produce any important strategic weapons, including drones, missiles. So if we attack Iran, so Iran could use some handguns or probably air gun. So that was what that meant. Of course, some people were ignorant. Maybe there were some people inside the country. They actually echoed what the enemy said, just out of ignorance. This is the arena, the battlefront. You are fighting in this battlefront. The presence of Basijis in the country, it means standing up to such big conspiracies. You defended holy shrines. You stand up to the Daesh terrorist group, which was a handiwork of the U.S. It was you who stood up to them. You brave people, you helped the brave combatants in Lebanon, and you have helped Palestinians, and we will continue to help Palestinians. This is the battlefront we are involved in. It is not just a bunch of rioters in the streets. Of course, it does not mean that we should ignore these rioters. No. Every rioter, every terrorist should be punished, no doubt about it. But it is not just this front. The battlefront is much vaster, and you are standing in the middle of this battlefront. So don't take this for granted. So don't take Basij for granted. You are fighting in such a front, so don't think that you're confined to a few minor jobs. Of course, these jobs should be tackled as well, should be dealt with as well. One of the most important jobs is the same thing, confronting rioters. So these rioters are tied to those who failed in that big conspiracy. So now they failed in their plots. Now they want to infiltrate into the country in another way. Some people, actually some rioters, chant slogans, some write graffiti and all that. Basij should not forget that our main confrontation is with global arrogance and global hegemony. We will also deal with these writers, but the main confrontation is with global hegemony. There are a few mercenaries. The main enemy is there. That is the main battlefront. Now, we regret to see that a few people believe that they have very high power, they have political thinking, but the analyses that we see by them, some of their analyses published in some newspapers or on some social media, some of these people say that people who claim to be aware of the political situation of the world, they say that in order to be able to bring these riots over the past few weeks, in order to be able to put an end to these riots, you should solve your problem with the U.S. They straightforwardly write this down. They say that you should solve your problem with the U.S. Or they say you should listen to the voice of the nation. I have seen these phrases in these articles and all that. They say that solve your problem with the U.S. and listen to the voice of the nation. So how is the problem with the U.S. solved? This is a real question. So let's ask a question. How is the problem with the U.S. solved by sitting at the negotiating table and actually telling the U.S. to give commitments and all that? And we tell them that you should do this, you shouldn't do that. Will the problem be solved? And as for the Algeria resolution, when it came to the release of the hostages around 40 years ago, at that time I was an MP. Remember, of course, I was at the front line. At that time, it was a parliament. It was a parliament legislation, of course. Some of the MPs, Iranian MPs, of course, through a third party, through Algeria, they held talks with the U.S. and some agreements were made, and they asked the U.S. to actually give some, and they told the U.S. not to interfere in Iran, to lift sanctions and all that. And here, in return, Iran said that it would release hostages. We released the hostages, but did the U.S. fulfill its commitments? Did the U.S. lift the sanctions? Did the U.S. Release our frozen assets? No, it didn't. It did not live up to its obligations. So that was the result of the negotiations with the U.S. As far as the JCPOA is concerned, they said that you should stop or cut down on industrial nuclear work. They said that to cut down on your work and reduce your nuclear activities. If you do this, we would do this. We would lift the sanctions. We would do this, we would do that. Did they do it? Of course not. They didn't keep their word. So negotiations won't solve our problem with the U.S. Only one thing will solve our problem with the U.S. And if we pay ransom to them, they will be satisfied. We should pay ransom to them, then they will ask us for another ransom, and a few days later they will hold us to ransom as well. Today they are telling us to actually stop nuclear activities, then they go for 20% uranium enrichment, 5% uranium enrichment, then they tell us to change the constitution, then they tell us to actually disband the Guardian Council. This is the ransom they want us to pay to them. So if you want to solve the problem with the U.S., you should keep paying ransom to the U.S. So they want us to set aside everything, to close down our defense industries and all that. This is what the U.S. wants. Which true Iranian is ready to pay such a ransom? I'm not saying that, well, maybe there is a person who does not believe in the Islamic Revolution, in the Islamic Republic, but he's an Iranian. He or she will not be ready to pay such a ransom. The U.S. will not settle for anything less than that. So holding negotiations with the U.S. does not solve any problems. So if you're ready to pay ransom, not once, not twice, if you're ready to keep paying ransom to them, if you're going to overstep your red lines, well, yes, then the U.S. will leave you alone. The situation will be similar to the one before the revolution, during the Pahlavi era. So many people were martyred. And in Iran, our country is making so much progress today, and you see young people are doing whatever they can on all fronts. So they write in their articles, they say, listen to the voice of the nation. So you heard the loud voice of the nation on the 13th of Aban this year. Did you hear the voice of the nation? You should listen or hear the voice of the nation. You saw the funeral of martyr Soleimani. That huge number of people taking part in the funeral of martyr Soleimani, around 10 million or more than 10 million people had attended that funeral. That was the voice of the Iranian people. And today, people taking part in the funeral of martyrs, that is the voice of the Iranian people. Somebody is martyred in an Iranian city. You see so many people, a huge number of people take part in the funeral ceremony, and they chant against terrorists, they chant against rioters. How is it that you're not hearing the voice of Iranian people? Now, you Basiji brothers, So I'm going to give you a few pieces of advice. So my first piece of advice, remain a Basiji. Remain a Basiji. Seek help from God in order to help you remain a Basiji. Maintain your Basiji spirit and faith. Second, don't take yourselves for granted. I'm not saying that be proud on that. No, one of the features of being a Basiji is that Basijis are not proud. But you should know that God actually, this is a blessing by God, and God has given you this blessing to be a Basiji. Third, identify your enemy. You should know who the enemy is. Second, when after you identify the enemy, also identify its weak points. Identify the enemy's Achilles heel. The enemy tries to actually create the impression that it is strong and big, but try to identify that enemy. In what situation the enemy is, what weak points it has, and all that. Identify the enemy and also identify the enemy's plots. Many people are taken by surprise when they face enemy's plots. Spiritual development. Okay, measure your spiritual progress and spiritual development. Try to find out if you're making progress or if you're moving forward or backward. See what good moves you made, what good things you did last month, or God forbid, maybe you have done something bad. See if when talk about good and evil, if you have if you have done more good things, good deeds this month or not. So, or measure your spiritual development and try to keep moving forward spiritually. I said you should identify the methods applied by the enemy. The enemy's most important modus operandi is to fake news and to spread lies. So you see the networks, you see some TV networks, satellite networks, which belong to the enemy, and also social media. They spread lies. They post fake news. They actually try to paint a black picture of some people and paint a rosy picture of others. So try to know that the enemy is spreading lies today and fake news. So after that, your responsibility is to actually illuminate the people, to make others understand it. So one of the vulnerable areas of the enemy is that if you are far-sighted enough, that will deal a blow to the enemy. So try to increase your far-sightedness. The enemy is seeking to gain dominance over brains and minds. So the enemy, it is more important for the enemy to gain domination over brains rather than over the people's land. If they can dominate people's minds, then those people will hand over their territory to the enemy automatically. So it is very important. Some people didn't tell lies themselves, but they confirmed the lies told by the enemy, unfortunately. So these are the dangers which exist. These are the dangers, so watch out for these dangers and help the people. So be and maintain your preparedness. Try not to be caught unawares. During the world of politics, it happens that you may get may get caught unawares. There are different ways to take somebody by surprise. One of the moves by the enemy is that it starts some move in a certain area and makes a fuss about it, and but it does its main job somewhere else in silence, because all attentions are paid to the first job that the enemy is doing and is kicking a fuss about it. So the country's officials should look around, should pay attention to what is going on inside the country and in countries around our country. It is important for us to see what's going on in countries around us. It is important. The West Asia region, the Caucasus region, the eastern regions of our country, all of them are important to us. We should take care and we should watch out for what the enemy is doing there. So everybody should make efforts in that regard. And now, during World Cup competitions, they have given us the list of the some moves that they did during World Cup competitions. Because during World Cup competitions, everybody, all eyes are on World Cup contests, and it takes a few weeks. So they are taking advantage of this to take people by surprise. So, speaking of World Cup, our Iranian national team actually created an honor for them, and I congratulate them on this victory. Our footballers made our people happy yesterday. And my last piece of advice, or maybe the penultimate one, be careful, watch out for the enemy's infiltration into the Basij force. Be careful about that. Sometimes a corrupt place, a person disguises himself or herself. For example, somebody may be disguised as a clergyman, and he poses as a clergyman. So, and these people can pose as a Basiji, as a clergyman, some corrupt politicians, and this is another piece of advice. And my last recommendation is a verse from the Holy Quran. May God bless you all.
You're listening there to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Husseini Khamenei.
Well, dear listeners, what you heard was the speech delivered by the leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, addressing the members of the Iranian voluntary force known as Basij on the occasion of Basij Week in Iran. During this speech, the leader of the Islamic Revolution said, Basij is one of the best initiatives of late Imam Khomeini. Ayatollah Khamenei said Basij is the school of love and it is a fruitful tree. He said late Imam Khomeini said he took pride in being a Basiji. The leader of the Islamic Revolution said Basij should be present in all scenes, adding that late Imam Khomeini ordered establishment of Basij after U.S. deployed warships to the Persian Gulf. The leader of the Islamic Revolution said late Imam Khomeini turned threat into an opportunity by establishing Basij. He said Basij is not a military organization per se. It is a body to serve people without any expectation. The leader of the Islamic Revolution reiterated Basij forces have been successful on scientific front. Our prominent nuclear scientists were Basiji. He said Basiji sacrificed themselves to serve people and the country is ready to train Basiji people. The leader of the Islamic Revolution said the spirit of Basiji has existed for ages. Late Imam Khomeini brought this spirit to realization. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said Imam Khomeini described Basij as a pure tree. He said element of spirituality is omnipresent in deeds of Basijis. The leader of the Islamic Revolution said Western colonialists have set their eyes on West Asia because of its oil. The leader said Iran is the most important country of this region, adding that usurper regime of Israel was established to serve as West base for dominating West Asia region. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said U.S. spent billions of dollars on their plot to harm Iran, adding that second nuclear deal is meant to strip Iran of its defensive powers. The leader said we are told to solve problems with the U.S., but did the U.S. remove sanctions? Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said negotiations will not solve our problems with the U.S., only paying ransom will do. Dear listeners, many thanks for being with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. What you just heard was our special coverage. We now return to our normal course of programs.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. with the light.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests had the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says it's strange to meet so many people with the same name. Obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is underway. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture.
Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest's ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula Line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula Line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
After repeated failed attempts, NASA has eventually launched this moon rocket on its debut flight. NASA's next-generation moon rocket blasted off from Florida, marking the start of the space agency's new program dubbed Artemis. An uncrewed Orion spaceship is fixed to the top of the 32-story tall Space Launch System rocket. It will be separated for a 25-day voyage around the moon and back without astronauts aboard. It was the third time after two previous launch attempts were cancelled for technical reasons. If the mission succeeds, a crewed Artemis II will orbit around the moon but not land on the surface in 2024. The third Artemis mission, scheduled for 2025, will be the first to put astronauts on the moon since Apollo's mission about 5 decades ago.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Iran has hosted an international student scientific contest dubbed Noor or Light. The annual event seeks to promote science among children and scout for child prodigies. Yusuf Jalali has the story.
They have only 1 minute to present a scientific idea in their homemade clips. Over 1,300 teenage science enthusiasts from 19 countries participated in Iran's Noor competition, a scientific contest for school students. The fifth edition of the event was themed with optical illusion and mathematical modeling. The top 100 videos were awarded during this closing ceremony in Tehran.
My work is titled The Bouncing Ball. We painted a long oval and a shadow under it. When we film it from a certain angle, it takes the shape of a levitating ball.
Our work is about an optical illusion. We created a set of conjoining cylinders that appeared to change shape in the mirror. The idea was first created by a Japanese engineer in 2016.
The most creative videos win the prize. They should be both educational and mind-blowing, like this floating Rubik's Cube, which appears to be levitating, but then turns out to be just an origami work.
We have two levels of the competition. One is the kind of general competition for the crowd, and many students can contribute on that, in that. And we have other level, which is for elite. And in that level, we have more sophisticated competition between elite.
Organizers say participants in Noor contest are not supposed to make breakthroughs. The main goal, they say, is to engage them in science and let them experience the excitement of scientific experiments.
Try to make these teenagers learn how they can think about science for the welfare of human beings and how they can apply it for them.
Mustafa Science and Technology Foundation is the organizer of this scientific event. The foundation also holds the biennial Mustafa Prize, which awards cash prizes to top scientists from across the Muslim world, whose accomplishments contribute to the welfare of human beings.
Mustafa Science and Technology Foundation, as the organizer of Noor competition, says prodigies are everywhere. They just need to be discovered. It says this contest is a platform that's specially designed to scout for teenage minds and give them a chance to shine. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Chinese aerobatic teams have been performing jaw-dropping stunts to mark the 73rd anniversary of the People's Liberation Army Air Force. Pilots wowed the audience with their complicated maneuvers, such as swooping close to the ground, making loops and rolls. Aerobatic teams use red, yellow and blue smoke trails representing the flag of the Chinese Air Force. The Hongying Aerobatic Team, also known as the Red Eagle, is made up of 10 JL-8 trainer planes and 20 pilots from the Air Force Aviation University. The performance was part of China's International Aviation and Aerospace Exhibition held in southern China. The exhibit typically draws thousands of participants in the field of aviation from countries all over the world. Iran is the land of saffron, and the red gold has earned the country a fortune throughout the centuries. Now Iran's city of Torbat Haydariya has hosted a saffron photography festival as a means to introduce the lucrative product to the world. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Like gold, it is weighed in shekels, not in kilos. And that's why saffron is called the red gold, reflecting how precious it is economically. Torbat Haydariya in northeast Iran is the hub of saffron cultivation in the country, producing an average of 20 million tons of the crop each year. Now the city hosts the Festival of Saffron Photography every year to introduce Iran as the land of saffron and how these hard-working farmers produce the strategic crop.
Photographers present in this festival should use their artistry to shed light on different stages of saffron harvest all the way to the final product. Everyone knows Iranian saffron, but perhaps few know how it's produced. So this festival highlights this issue using photography.
Photography is a universal language that needs no translation, so their photos can better introduce this strategic plan to the world from unique angles.
This year, Iran exported roughly 300 tons of saffron, generating more than $350 million in income, according to the data provided by the Ministry of Agriculture. Experts believe Iran could have a much higher share of the global trade of saffron if it pays better attention to branding and marketing of the product.
Due to favorable weather conditions, Iranian saffron is unique in the world. But unfortunately, in many countries, it's smuggled in bulk and is packaged under foreign brands and then sold at higher prices. If we can brand it inside Iran, then we can export it more efficiently.
The young farm owner says his saffron is exported to Europe and the Middle East, despite the restrictions caused by U.S. sanctions on Iran. But more than the U.S. measures, he's concerned about the impact of climate change on saffron cultivation, warning of what he calls saffron immigration from his city, if authorities remain idle.
Unfortunately, saffron is gradually leaving our region and moving to western parts of Iran. This is due to changes in weather conditions and declining rainfall here. If the government helps farmers with modification of planting patterns, we can stop this disaster.
Over the past 2 years, Iran has expanded its cultivation area for saffron to 115,000 hectares, nearly 20 times more than the entire worldwide land dedicated to the crop. While the Iranian red gold is mainly cultivated in the northeastern Khorasan province, other parts of the country, including Khuzestan and Chaharmahal Bakhtiari, are also fertile for saffron farming.
For centuries, saffron has been a key word.